Welcome to the Live Greatly podcast. I'm your host, Crystal Bauer. It's time to say goodbye to sacrificing your well-being on the way to success. As an entrepreneur in wellness, integrative medicine fellow, university lecturer, longtime physician assistant, experienced in integrative psychiatry and functional medicine, and a keynote speaker, I have a lot of experience and expertise to share. So get ready to optimize your well-being and move in the direction of your dreams. Help spread this valuable and powerful message by sharing the podcast with your friends, family, and community. Together, we can make a profound impact on the world. Now for a quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed on this podcast are purely the opinions of the author. They are not intended to provide medical advice or treatment recommendations, and the contents of this podcast are intended for informational and educational purposes only. Please always seek the guidance of your physician or other qualified healthcare professional. If you have any questions regarding your specific health, changes to diet and exercise, and any medical conditions. I'm so excited. I want to share with you something that I've been working really hard on that I just launched. And I just released an 8-week online course to optimize well-being, to improve performance, really to supercharge success for individuals and for companies and businesses. So this just launched and offering a special offer right now as a new launch. If you mentioned that you heard about this from the podcast, I'm happy to extend it to you. And I also am doing free 15-minute consultations to talk about this further to see if it's a good fit for you. And this is just going to be for a limited time since it's just got started. So I'm really, really excited about this. I did 56 videos where I pulled all my expertise, all my education, and my experiences really to inspire and uplift you for true transformation. So please feel free to reach out. You can learn more at www.livegreatly.online. I'm also doing packages for businesses and companies where I'm doing this wonderful course for the employees. And I'm also doing seminars and Q&As at the end that really ties it all together. So please reach out, and I'm happy to add value to you and your corporation, especially with all the stress that people are facing right now amid COVID-19. Now let's jump into the topic for today's podcast. And today we are extremely lucky to have an amazing and inspiring guest, Dr. Khalsa. And Dr. Khalsa is a classmate with me in the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine Fellowship. She's wonderful, and she's also an instructor for the program. And Dr. Khalsa has a lifelong interest in mindful living as a basis for long-term vitality of mind, body, and spirit. She completed a residency in internal medicine at the Mayo Clinic in 2005 and is board certified in internal medicine, integrative medicine, and hospice medicine. Dr. Khalsa has deepened her studies on health and healing by becoming a Kundalini yoga instructor, Reiki master, and participating in a 2-year full-time program on Ayurveda at the Ayurvedic Institute in Albuquerque and India. Serving as both an integrative medicine PCP instructor at the Integrative Medicine Fellowship, the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine through the University of Arizona, and consultant to other medical practices, she's dedicated time and energy to promoting an increased understanding of the link between long-term health and the daily choices we make. She's currently focusing her energy to helping doctors nourish their vitality using Ayurveda so that they may better serve a world that needs healing. So welcome. I am so excited that you are here today. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh my gosh, it's so great to see you. I am enjoying this time we have here this morning, and I love connecting right now. You know, we're all home, and there's some, you know, we're a little bit isolated, so it's been fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we were chatting a little bit before recording, and you had mentioned that you've gone through kind of a journey over the past couple of years, a lot of self-discovery, and that actually has helped you right now with everything going on. So I'm hoping that maybe you could share that to try and help everyone out there who's adjusting to all of these changes and stressors and unknowns that we're facing.
Yeah, I'd love to. So I had, as the introduction sort of alluded to, I've had a really fun arc sort of studying and learning integrative medicine. And it probably started in college when I had gone to the public health clinic and they said, here, take pharmaceutical for this problem. And I thought, I think this is really more stress related. And so learning integrative medicine is something I've been doing for, gosh, almost 30 years now. And in 2018, I decided to leave clinical medicine. And for a lot of people, and they looked at my resume and they said, my gosh, you have almost 20 years of literal instruction. Why would you leave? Mm-hmm. And I sort of began this process of just had a moment, I always like to say, kind of a hard stop. And I had been in this long learning curve, and I was having this sort of challenge integrating it into a primary care practice. But I just reached a hard stop. It came really quickly for me. I had been sort of going along in the practice, and I could just feel my vitality sort of dipping, feel really unusual thoughts starting to come into my head, like, what would it matter if I wasn't here anymore? You know, like, what, you know, these real heavy thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I realized, like, I think I'm dealing with some pretty significant burnout. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm forthright with people about it, because I don't think we can begin to look at the system or heal ourselves until we're honest and we say, gosh, this really happened for me. And so then it progressed pretty quickly. And as I was making the decisions to kind of create a pause, I realized, like, wow, this job that had a lot of meaning for me and income that sort of sustained me and my household and my identity, these mm-hmm. were all tied into how I created and did medicine. And so taking that pause actually meant all of those things were going to be up for examination.
Mm-hmm. Wow. You know, that takes so much courage to do that. Because, you know, I think a lot of times as healthcare providers, we create this box of, we should be doing this. You know, we went through all this training, and you especially, I mean, your education is so extensive and so impressive. It's like, you feel like, okay, I did that, and now I'm supposed to do this. And exactly. when you're not fulfilled or nourished by that, it's like, it's tricky. Like, well, what do I do? And I went through my own journey where I left clinical practice at the end of last year. And it was in the sense of, I didn't feel as fulfilled. I was feeling like the one-on-one, I loved helping people, but I was feeling so drained. And even doing all the self-care practices that I recommend to people, I was doing all of it, feeling like, well, I should be fine because I'm doing all these wonderful things for myself, but I still would bring home the heaviness of what I was seeing and hearing throughout the day. And mm-hmm. it took a lot of, I think, courage to say, I need to step back, and I'm not sure exactly what it's going to look like, but I love teaching. And let's see what happens. And now it's opened up this door of, like, wow, I listened to my intuition. I trusted myself. And it's formed now into this wonderful, you know, opportunity of speaking engagements and teaching and the podcast and all this expansion of things I never would have thought of before. Of like, whoa, there's other ways you can help people. Yeah. And use your talents, you know? But I would love to hear your thoughts on how we as healthcare providers feel sometimes trapped mm-hmm. in what you can do, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting because it isn't, and I recognize this, for some people, you know, leaving their practice is just, it's just not an option for whatever the reason. and thinking that, and let me rephrase that, people think that way, meaning I have no other option. It's black or white. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is where the internal tension starts, is that there is no other way to do this. And when that begins the sort of internal mantra of, well, it's this or it's this, I think that's when things start to get heavy, because there is, even as I'm understanding, there are ways to reframe internal expectations. There are ways to work and innovate within our jobs. There are ways to reframe what we actually want to accomplish in the visit. And I actually think, this is my own bias, that group visits are going to solve a lot of issues for integrative providers, because there's a lot of information that's sort of a little redundant, you could maybe say, you know, that you're sharing. It's like, hey, have you thought about this? We say that again and again in these integrative consults. And I'm a huge proponent, and a big project I'm working on is getting content for physicians to use in those group visits. And so, you know, sometimes the solution is, well, wow, I really get the problem. How am I part of the solution? And sometimes that's innovating within your organization. Sometimes that's stepping away from the job or organization that you're part of, which was really critical for me, because they started sending messages that this wasn't interesting to them. This mm-hmm. wasn't something they wanted to explore. And again, people can feel limited, like, oh, well, there's no other jobs where I live. I've heard that a lot, actually. Mm-hmm. And I always say, well, you know, sometimes moving is a good thing. You know, it's sort of like, oh, but it's a lot of work. but we just went through a huge move. We downsized to kind of accommodate these changes. And the real upside to that was like, we, you know, the KonMari method where you sort of, what sparks joy.
Yes, like, I love that.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much everything in my life now sparks joy. Like we cleaned everything out. Mm-hmm. Everything is sort of zen. We like to get it organized and then I make a mess and then we organize again. But you know, my point being is like, if we can open our minds and our hearts to the possibility of wonder and get rid of the coulda, woulda, shoulda, mindset, then it's like, wow, change, we can embrace that. Right. Even if it feels initially overwhelming, that discernment and the work of discernment and even the discomfort is actually something that takes us deeper into a sense of meaning or balance or joy. Mm-hmm. And it's not an easy thing to sort of digest. Even as I say it, I'm like, well, that seems like a lot, but you just have to start it with one step at a time and a journal entry, in a little saying to yourself in a conversation with somebody who you know is going to get it. Right. As opposed to holding in. I even yesterday had a pretty in-depth conversation with a complete stranger, a female physician who was like working in a COVID ICU. And she was really, really in a dark, heavy place. And I thought, well, let's just hang out here for a minute and see if we can work on some mindset pieces, because it's not an option to jump out of that work right now. And not everybody can. And some people would be like, this ICU wouldn't function without me.
Right.
And so, you know, it's important to kind of remember that.
That's very true. I think, you know, looking back at what going through training and, you know, I went through physician training as a PA, and now I've done some lecturing and I help out at different PA programs. And I notice with students, even they're already starting to have the tendencies of taking things on and really going about things in a way that seems not beneficial for their health. You know, it's like holding onto a lot of pressure, so much pressure on themselves for studying and achievement. And if I don't do well on this test, like I'm not going to get the job I want. It's kind of those extreme cases. And I really feel like this education needs to start at the, you know, at the university level, like in those classes, like we need to be teaching these students in healthcare how to take care of themselves. And also I feel like how to trust themselves and to love themselves. Like there's this whole concept of self-sacrifice. Mm-hmm. And I really don't think you can be a best clinician if you're not feeling nourished yourself. You know, it's really hard to give when you're depleted. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah. You know, there's so many things that come up for me when you mention that. One of them that's sort of interesting, at least on in the physician trajectory where you do your residency, I think a lot of the dysfunction starts in the clinical rotations. I don't know the PA process as well, excuse me, in the third and fourth year of medical school. And we began this sort of mindset of show up at all costs.
Mm-hmm.
Show up at all costs. And when you're young, you know, when you're in your 20s, there's a resiliency. I don't even know what the biochemistry or the energetics, you know, whatever it is that gives us that like resiliency expansion, like I can work 40 hours straight. And one of the things that I've noticed is that as we've looked at the work hours, there's been such an ongoing evolution and dialogue. I was the first class, so I was in residency 2002, first class to have work hour restrictions came after my intern year. I always like to say, I just missed that. I needed just in time to pick up slack as a second year for the interns that then had to. So it was sort of like the best of all worlds, you can say. But, you know, there has been so much resistance to making the transition to making the work hours in residency tolerable. Mm-hmm. And the mindset behind that is one of, well, you won't learn what you need to learn, which I don't know. I can't, I don't actually know the research to comment, is that true or not true? But that is a prevailing thought pattern. And number two, which I think a lot of people don't actually understand, is that residents are highly underpaid. for the work they're doing. And they're staffing, in many ways, hospitals and hospital systems that could literally not afford to operate without this basically unpaid labor. I mean, they get a paycheck, but it's well below minimum wage in many cases. Mm-hmm. And for the hours they're working. I mean, it's a okay living, you know, varies between $40,000 and $50,000 a year, which I imagine some people would be grateful for. Mm-hmm. So again, it's not to sort of belittle that there's actually salary, but for the hours they're working, it's generally below minimum wage. And you know, these are things that are very difficult to structurally resolve. And what happens is you come out of that training process with that as your pervasive thought patterns. And it creates a long-standing box that's invisible within your psyche, I believe, as a doctor. So that this show up at all costs, mm-hmm. You know, sacrifice personal needs, knowledge is king. You know, these kind of paradigms of, show up, it really has been something I had to think quite a bit about as I was retooling my career. Mm-hmm. Because can a physician do anything other than just see patients? Well, not based on my training, you know, because literally you just do it all. Mm-hmm. You lecture, you write books, you do articles, you do research, you see patients.
That's all.
All of that. It's like the overachiever quintessential mm-hmm. carrot, you know? And this, one of the analogies that I often thought about in my own journey was, and I think this actually stems into childhood, if I was perfectly honest. I think there's a latent tendency of people drawn into medicine that gets accentuated through the process. Mm-hmm. But there's a sense that life is always just a step in front of you, where the happiness is, where the contentment is, where the I've arrived is.
Yeah.
So as soon as you get that little bite, it's like, oh, whoop, whoop, there goes the carrot, you know, like, oh, I just thought I had that. And I think that consummate search for the carrot in physician psyche and, you know, in healers, even in, you know, physician's assistants, nurse practitioners, I think nurses don't have it in quite the same way. Mm-hmm. But this notion of, well, I did well on my SATs. Awesome. I'm going to get into a good undergraduate. Okay. I did good on my MCATs. I'm going to get into a good medical school and I got to ace these pre-med courses. Oh, I got a good, you know, USMLE score. I'm going to get into the residency I want. And oh gosh, it goes on, you know, fellowship and attending jobs and, you know, teaching jobs. It's always an external reward.
Yes.
Until we can really take that pause and say, where am I celebrating within myself the rewards of my life, the work I've earned? What can I celebrate in that? It's a really tough journey, because then those coulda, woulda, shouldas are there. I should be. Mm-hmm. I just want, if only.
Mm-hmm. It's your tying, your satisfaction and your sense of worth to these external circumstances. And when you don't get the job you want, or you don't, you know, do well on that test, or when things don't work out the way that you, you know, in your mind want them to, it can be devastating for people. And I think especially when you're an overachiever and a perfectionist, you know, it's getting into those tendencies of like validation for your worth. It's like all of those external things are letting you know that you're worthy, that you're, you know, giving you that intrinsic self-worth, where it should be coming from within you. And I think that what I'm kind of striving to do is to help educate people on like, how can you be successful? Okay. And really, you know, achieve your goals and have that higher vision for your life, whatever that may be for the world, but also love yourself and also be healthy, you know, and be happy. And that is not an easy thing to do, especially when you are someone who is really, you know, a perfectionist and, you know, a go-getter. It's separating that. Like, if I don't get that, like, I still love who I am. I still love myself. And like, it doesn't represent my worth. It's just, I'm sharing my talents with the world, and that may look different, you know, as your life progresses. But that's something I think can get missed for a lot of people. It's like all about the achievement.
Well, you know, and it's interesting because, you know, self-care isn't unicorns and pajamas, you know?
Yeah.
as I like to say, like, you know, there's this idea of like, oh, I've got this new makeup, or I've got this new essential oil, or I got this crystal, or whatever. I mean, I'm using more metaphysical analogies here, but if I have this new little shiny object, that's self-care. But actually, to me, self-care and the routes to self-love can involve difficult conversations with ourselves, mm-hmm. meaning like a check-in. Is this serving me? Mm-hmm. And what am I going to have to feel if I let it go? Now, interestingly enough, often letting go feels so good, mm-hmm. but it's what we're so familiar with. So this new terrain can feel uncomfortable and not familiar. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they always say like that circle that's around you. So if you're making these changes for self-care and nurturing, and you come into these moments where there's a little bit of discomfort, I actually think that's okay. Mm-hmm. And finding community and people around you that actually embrace that with you, meaning you can do a check-in and say, I'm working on this thing and I'm having some fear come up. I'm having some shame come up. I'm having some uncertainty come up. And they can sort of jump in the arena with you, as Brené Brown says, so that you can feel vulnerable in that. Because even you can take your perfection into your self-care process. Like, mm-hmm. oh, I am fine. I have no issues. I am completely aligned with self-love.
Yes, right? And I know.
I want that. I don't know about everybody else. Like, I wanted there to be just all this ease in that. But it isn't always easy. And that was something else I had to sort of chew on for a while. Like, and I think it's sort of like a garden. You know, first you till the soil. You look at what regionally can grow, you know, so setting realistic expectations. What are your intentions? Where do you want to take your attention with these intentions? And then what are you planting? Mm-hmm. You can plant seeds of doubt. You can plant seeds of happiness. And what are you growing? You right. can grow doubt. You can grow happiness. But it's not overnight.
Right. Yeah. No, that's all very well said. And I think, you know, being real, being authentic, like that is so valuable. And I think back in like probably when I was going through high school and college, like I had this idea of like, I wanted to present myself as perfect, mm-hmm. you know, and like mm-hmm. there's this idea that that's what people want. And I'm, as I've grown, it's like, no, like, you know, people want people to be real. Like everyone goes through different challenges. Like it's, mm-hmm. I think, healthy and good to be open about, you know, your flaws or what you're working on. Like everyone has them, and it makes you more approachable and I think more relatable.
Yeah.
And so there's this idea of like, I have to be perfect. And I think in medicine too, it's like, you know, in some ways, like things are presented like it's the end all be all. Like this is the fact, this is the answer. Like we know everything. And it's just not true. You know, there's mm-hmm. so much unknown and uncertainty. And I think it's just like getting comfortable with that and being open and authentic and with connection too, like you talked about who you're surrounding yourself with. And I think just being able to really form those connections, and that starts with just being honest, you know, yeah. and like not being afraid of failure. And you talked about like that comfort zone, and I'm a huge fan for getting outside of your comfort zone. It's, I think, key for growth, like in order yeah. to excel, like you have to get out of your comfort zone, but it's not always easy, right. you know, especially when you're starting. It can definitely be intimidating.
It's like, oh, awkward.
Yeah. But then it's better. Like my first podcast episode, I was so nervous.
Right.
I was like, I'm like, I'm just going to do it, you know? Yeah. And now if I listen back, I'd probably be like, but I'm so proud of myself because I did it, you know? And I think we all need to start to have that attitude, like lighten up about ourselves, be like, yeah. you know, we're all doing the best we can. Let's be kinder to ourselves and stop being so judgmental.
Well, I think the challenge with this in medicine is there's sort of a zero tolerance for mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And probably rightly so.
True, true.
And I think this is the piece that really confounded me. It's like, wow, you know, what if I miss something? Well, then that makes mm-hmm. me hypervigilant. Or what if it's somehow I misunderstood what was needed. it's never intentional. I have literally never met a healer, doctor, nurse practitioner who intentionally made a mistake with a patient. But we have this mindset, and the medical legal culture, which I have to just throw that in there, creates this intense fear around the ramifications. And, you know, for physicians that are, that do make mistakes or who have board action placed upon them, they go through very extensive existential time. It is a no joke process.
Right. And I think it's a lot of pressure because you have limited time as a healthcare provider. Exactly. So I know I would have limited time and I'd have a new patient. I'd have to go through all these things and then all their lab work. And ultimately it was like, you need to make follow-up appointments. But I think the expectation sometimes when you have a patient there, they want it all done right there. Exactly. And it's kind of just being setting those healthy boundaries. Like I can only accomplish so much in this amount of time.
Right.
So we may have to have, you know, multiple visits to get to all these different things, but that can be really hard. It's a lot of pressure. And then if you're running late,
it really starts adding up.
Yeah. So I definitely feel for that and I can relate to that. And I think too, you had talked about kind of that need to be a perfectionist. And I think when you're going through training and there's all this information getting, you know, coming in. I mean, when you're under stress though, like that impacts your ability to retain. So it's kind of like, it doesn't make
whole, paradoxical.
It doesn't make sense to me. I think that there should be, you probably would be able to retain the information for a longer period if it was done in a way that was more conducive to like healthy sleep and, you know, all the rest of it. I don't know.
Well, I think it's, you know, healer, heal thyself. And, you know, it is, I don't claim to have any of the answers of how we're going to fix all this, but I do think we have to start identifying what's happening and, you know, creating these, and there are some physicians doing a lot of good work and coaching other physicians on how to like create this practice model that works for you and your, how you're built. Mm-hmm. So like for me, I'm built for depth. You know, it's just like, it's in my DNA, I think, depth. I like to go really deep in patient evaluations. Like, tell me about childhood trauma deep, you know, like, because I know that has a bearing on current states of imbalance. And that's part of my Ayurvedic training. Mm-hmm. But you can't do that in a 15-minute visit.
No.
You can't ask that of yourself or the patient. And so you wisely said, you know, having these boundaries, having this clarity about what can actually be accomplished is so important. It's so important. And, you know, knowing right place, right time, meaning if you're in a classic, if you're an integrative provider who's landing in a classic primary care environment, think about group visits. Think about a model where you can scale your message and your education for a common group, insomnia, diabetes, inflammation, stress management. But I really think the group visit is one of the ways we can scale all these beautiful principles that are in integrative and lifestyle medicine that are these foundations for health, how to sleep better, how to move, how to connect with yourself and others. What's a whole food plant-based diet look like? Getting rid of intoxicants. Those six pillars have, the American Academy of Lifestyle Medicine says 80% of cardiovascular disease could be prevented just by making sure everyone was doing those. And you know, it's really difficult because in modern medicine, we aren't in the maintain the health of the healthy. We're in the look at the disease state, see what we can do about it.
Wow. But, well, thank you for sharing all of that. I mean, I think your journey is just so fascinating. And you also are an amazing chef.
Oh, yes.
You have tons of beautiful photos on Instagram. So for anyone listening, you know, she's amazing. And she cooked for our fellowship class and everything was delicious and everything is so nourishing for your body. So maybe you could just briefly talk about that and then, you know, we can come
Mind
to
it. Yeah. So I, in college, I was having a toss up, chef or medical school And part of that was, as I alluded to, when I was in undergraduate, I had really severe digestive issues. And when I went to student health, they were like, here, take this drug. It'll make it go away. And I was like, I think this has to do with stress and what I'm eating. And they were like, sure, go ahead and work that out. You know, it was like, no connection to that whatsoever. And I, looking back, it was probably an intern or, you know, no dig on interns, of course, but like, it was probably just someone who had very limited experience. Mm-hmm. And so they were just operating from what they'd been taught, not from as much someone who'd been in practice a long time. Who would know, this is a stressed out pre-med kid. Okay. Yep. You know, let's get them, you know, this journey with perfection for me has not been easy. And, you know, thank God I'm finally, you know, it took me like 35 years. But so what happened is that I just realized like food is so foundational to our emotional health, our physical health. And for me, I notice it in my spiritual health. So when I'm eating deeply nourishing foods, and as I went down the road, I always like to say, first, I like to eat. I mean, feed me. Anyone wants to feed me, invite me over. I'm an eater. At my core, I'm an eater. So I learned to cook to support my eating habits, you know, and I always love to go out to restaurants and sample and then make them again at home. So I just through the years learned that like, I had kind of a knack for that. And then in that time in undergraduate, I started learning about Ayurveda. So actually I've been studying it for a very, very long time. And I started doing these Ayurvedic principles to build Agni or digestive fire. Mm-hmm. And that was when I started seeing this marriage of like, creativity in the kitchen and mindfulness. And I don't know, maybe 20 years or so ago, someone had said to me that in the spiritual communities, they often bring people with quite developed spiritual practices to be the ones that create the food in the kitchen. Mm. And that was when a little light just switched. And I was like, oh, wow, we can bring this intentionality into the food we share. And so when I started lecturing and teaching at the Integrative Medicine Center, for some reason, I was like, I'm going to hold space so that the plants can teach. That was always my mindset. Like, we need to give voice to Mother Earth, to the mother who's nurturing us. And so if we can bring forward that, then that's a huge blessing. And so I put a lecture together. It was sort of academic and it had evidence, but I just saw everyone's face go, ooh, next treat. And so I just sort of refined it to have things that I felt like had dense phytonutrients, you know, things that would bring... In Ayurveda, we say sattva, meaning this sort of lightness of being and natural proclivity to sort of compassion to others. And so this diet sort of has those, this samples with this lecture carries these food principles, but also is this marriage. And I think along the way, I just realized like, you know, also I think I'm an artist. And so this outlet, for a while I made jewelry and then, I got a DSLR as a gift in about 2006. And you could say game over after that, because before I had done photography, it's like, you got to get it developed and you know, you're super busy as a doctor. You can't get it, you know, you have to drop it off and you just, there was lots of room for error. But when the digital world arrived, I was like, ooh. Yeah. And so that's when I really sort of doubled down and started learning photography skills and the manual settings on my camera and learning the Adobe products to do some post-processing and, you know, scripting and styling. And it really just became this flow for me. And sometimes my husband watches me. He's like, you're so active. And I feel like there's so much tension you're dealing with while you're taking these photos. And I'm like, it's a creative process.
You're in the zone. You're so good at it. I mean, honestly, these photos I was showing my kids this morning, I was like, oh, this is what I'm talking to today. Look at her pictures. And they're like, ooh.
I know. Awesome. You know, I think that, and again, this is somewhat the Ayurvedic background, is that by engaging the senses, we actually tonify our cellular intelligence. I've got no scientific evidence for that, but it's a core teaching in Ayurveda. And I realized that visual storytelling was something that really mattered to me. Mm-hmm. And that these images are actually conveying deep spiritual principles for me. The way they are coming across are actually an exploration of things that I'm thinking about spiritually. And the colors and the composition and the feeling that I'm trying to show. And so, you know, and some people are like, oh, that's pretty, it's ice cream, you know, but I'm like, don't you see the merger of the cream and the gold and the flower?
Whatever. Awesome. You're awesome.
The artist's journey is so weird sometimes, but yeah, so I just love it. And I encourage, you know, doctors and healers and people in medicine to get out there, get your hands in the kitchen, get creative, because it's a place you can fail. You can fail again and again and again, and there's no ramification for it. And what's failure anyway? It's really just a judgment.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Yeah. And I know for me, it's like, okay, I need to transition from viewing failure as something to be ashamed of. I think we all do, to, yeah, okay, I'm going to learn something from this. And it's really an opportunity. Mm-hmm. It's like to love yourself. Yep. And to grow, you know, exactly. That's what it's all about. We're all out here learning and mm-hmm. trying to do the best we can, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, you have been such a pleasure. Yeah, do you have a website that I can share? Cause I'll share it in the episode details.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It's drsirichund.com. And you can find me on social media under Luminous Foods or Dr. Siri Chund. I'm kind of hanging out in both places.
Awesome. Okay. So I will put some of that in the episode details. Thank you so much for tuning in today. It's been such a pleasure to share all this wonderful information with you. You can learn more about me and Live Greatly at www.livegreatly.co. You can learn about my 8-week online course at www.livegreatly.online. And you also can book that free 15-minute consultation with me there, which is just being offered for a limited time. And remember, if you're interested in that 8-week course for yourself, for your employees, for your business company, make sure to mention that you've heard about it from this podcast so I can extend a special offer to you and to your business. And I'm also doing seminars and speaking engagements and Q&As for businesses and packages along with this course for employee wellness and well-being. So please reach out if I can help you and help your business. I know there's a lot of stress right now going on with COVID-19, and I really want to be able to offer value to help you and your businesses do your best, show up in the world as the best version of yourself. You can follow Live Greatly on Instagram and Twitter at livegreatly_co. And you can follow me on Facebook at livegreatly.co. And please make sure to subscribe to my podcast so you don't miss out on any future episodes. I always appreciate it if you can leave a review. That definitely helps me out. And please share this so that we really can spread the message that you don't need to sacrifice your well-being to attain success. Thank you so much. Have a fantastic day. This is Crystal Bauer with Live Greatly, inspiring you to awaken your ultimate potential.